First off, welcome everybody to the YAG. For those of you, if anybody doesn't know, I am Father Stephen McKenna. I live here, assistant pastor here, and take care of pastor at St. Hugh of Lincoln, Milwaukee, and all our various missions as well outside of that. So every time we have the YAG, there's always a talk to be given about you all as individuals, where you are in your life, what to do in this period of time to best set yourself up, to best do what God is calling you to do right now, and to best put yourself in a position to do what God calls you to in the future. And it is an interesting concept. I was joking with a couple of the parishioners afterwards. I said, I always feel like I come up and sound like the old man who yells at kids to get off his lawn. You know, it's sort of like, back in my day, this way. But I don't mean it to sound that way. It's not meant to be, in a way of looking down. It's meant to be motivational in a way to get you to understand that you want to do all you can to set yourself up for success. And so it starts with this understanding of where you are in your life right now. You are in a particularly unique spot in life where things are less clear for you in this age, time of your life. When you're little children, things are really easy. What are your responsibilities as a small little child? Well, it's to play, it's to get along with your siblings, it's to obey your parents. They're really pretty basic and simple. As you become an older child, you have some development of responsibility, of tasks that you have to do. You have to do your part around the household and helping out. You also have to look to be paying attention to your schooling, learning the things that you need to learn, etc. That's your responsibility. And when you look to the future, well, things become somewhat clearer again, that you now have a family and you now have dependents to take care of, and you have responsibilities of bills to pay and mouths to feed and all of these things. It's now that it's sort of this in-between. You're no longer children, but yet you are not fully realizing the vocations that you have in life just yet. You are in this sort of limbo area in between. So what is it to do in this time frame is what I wanted to talk about today. What is what you are to do to maximize your potential for the future, but also to do what to realize that there are things now that God calls you to do, and how you can really do God's will in your life here and now, at the age you are, and at the state of life you are at this moment in time. So to start, you just have to understand that as a young adult, who's not married and who's not into the religious statement kind of way. It is for you to understand that this is a time in which you learn to really embrace being an adult and to wade into the waters of the responsibilities of that. What does that mean? Well, a lot of it has to do with the things of establishing and setting up roots and good foundations to build upon. Until this point, you've had other people to do that for you. You've had people instruct you and tell you that you need to go here at this time. You have an appointment for this thing here. Hey, you shouldn't do that. That's probably not really good. Hey, don't hang around with those people. Do hang around with these people, whatever. You've had people in your life who have instructed you and guided you in those ways. Now is not the time any longer for those to be the predominant voice in your life. For once, for the first time, now you have to start thinking, I have to be the voice to tell myself what I need to do and what I should be focusing on. But to do so, well, first off, that does not mean abandon all paying attention to your parents' advice. It's foolhardy to think that your parents, who actually care about you and also have life experience behind them, that they don't have sage words of wisdom that they can share with you and they can give you as advice and things like that. It's also to say that I understand the irony that I'm here telling you, like, now's the time you make decisions for yourself as I tell you what you should do. And it's not lost on me either. But it is to understand that this is a transient period, and so you need to do the things that are setting you up for the future, not entertaining the things of your past. So you are no longer a child. You should move past the things of a child. You should start to embrace the things of maturity, of responsibility, of ownership for your own life, of setting your own pathway, of establishing yourself for moving forward. Some of that is going to find its way in the way of practicalia, the things that are going to be for your temporal life, if you will. That, for instance, for men, you know, as men particularly, now is a time for work. You know, that this is a time where you need to start thinking, I have the energy of my youth, and I have the extra time on my hands that I can expend myself in ways of labor, because in that industrious attitude towards life, yes, there's money to be made. So you can work hard and make money. It will be $1 at a time that you do so, because you're not going to maximize your earning potential now. But forget about the idea of maximizing. So many people now, I hear it so often, come out of college and think that the world owes them something. Mm-hmm. And that, oh, well, now I've got my degree, and so I should be making $100,000 and, you know, working at some tech company or whatever it is. That is not going to happen. If you do that, if you have that mindset, you will continue living at your parents' house. Like, that's not going to help you. If you think to yourself that the world owes you nothing, and that you have to work hard to get every ounce that you can get, if you think to yourself that I am a young 20-something-year-old with no life experience, and so I need to go out and gain that life experience, I need to go out and learn the things of industry that I want to apply for myself, I need to be willing to take on the extra overtime, I need to be willing to work for the lower wages, I need to be willing to shadow an apprentice from somebody. I need to do these things so I can, like a sponge, take it in. Then I'm going to start learning and establishing myself. If you have the entire world to compete against in the aspect of industry, that you have the entire world out there that does not care if you live on a street or if you live in a mansion. It doesn't. In fact, they would rather see you fail. So it is your responsibility and nobody else's to actually apply yourself to that. And if you, the people who you hear, you're all traditional Catholics. So what do you have that is to your benefit? You have a semblance of moral principles that are firm in your mind and in your heart. You have a certain amount of honesty that is, you know, above and beyond what the average person would have. You have also an understanding better than a lot of people of the world of responsibility and of justice and owing something, you know, owing to an employer your time and your effort and to actually be put in an honest day's work and not to cheat them out and things like this. That moral upstanding part of your life is an actual advantage if you utilize it properly. If you go out and think to yourself, I'm going to be the man who's ready to work hard, comes in early, leaves late, and is the one that is always dependable, you will catch the notice of an employer, because when they see hard work and responsibility and reliability, well, that is what sets it out from other applicants. When they see somebody who's willing to come in and grind away and work hard and not complain about it and take on the dirty tasks that the people don't want to do and to do the things that are understood to be the lower tier work, well, then you have established yourself as somebody that, that can be counted on those things. And like our Lord says with the men of the talents, you know, they've been given, you know, respective different talents, and the one with the five and the one with the two, they apply their talents well, and then our Lord rewards them, you know, in heaven with far more. And the world is the same. You apply your talents to the best of your ability. You utilize the things that you have going for you, and you don't squander the gifts that you have. Then it is then that it'll be something that'll create a dependability, a reliability, and a trust that'll that will separate you out from the herd and put set yourself up for life. So, you know, aspect of work, there is no easy button. There is no shortcut to be gained. It is that daily grind. It is that hard striving after long hours, sweat of the brow, putting in the time, the effort, the work, and being the reliable. No, your boss is not going to wonder, is so-and-so going to show up today? He knows you're going to be there, and he knows that he can count on you. That is going to set yourself up for the future. Don't worry about what position they give you now. Who cares? Just work, get, you know, and save your shekels. As for other things in life, as a general aspect, it's also a time in your life where you're meant to learn. So we pointed out in the way of industry, like you're supposed to learn the things of occupation that you're going to have. And to think, you know, again, I'd rather, just referring back to work again a little bit, I'd rather, if I was in your position, I would rather work for less money, but at an area that I can build a career out of, than work for more money now at something that is not an occupation, but is merely a job. When I was young, it was still legal to actually have unpaid internships, you know, and that was what you gained. You worked in an area that you could turn into a career later on, and your payment was basically the experience that you got and the knowledge that you gained. I think that's illegal now. It probably falls under slavery or something, but still, the idea behind it is a good one. The concept to take from that is a good one. What you gain in knowledge and what you can build up as sort of like a foundation for your future, that is to be counted as just as valuable, if not more valuable than the money. You know, you like working at the like a warehouse for like Amazon, that, you know, that monstrosity is always there. And so it's not to say that it's not an honest day's work. It is. But that what you might make in, oh, I can get whatever, $20 an hour working there, whereas if I'm working as an apprentice carpenter, I'm going to start off making $15 an hour. One actually sets you up for your future, and one gives you a couple extra dollars now. And you can see that it's more worthwhile to work for the thing that is going to set you up for your future than what is, you know, don't think of just the here and now. It is, you are in a time period where you have to look towards the future rather so than so much to the immediate. Second, in addition to, so that's just the reference back. In addition to that, to build off of that though, is there are a lot of things in life that you will benefit from learning. And that's not just occupation wise, to set yourself up for success in so many different things. Now is a time where you are, you know, have enough of the world, of a worldview to understand that there are people around you in different places that have a lot to offer. A lot of them live in your house right now. You know, those, your parents, those people that you grumble about when they tell you you're gonna be home by a certain time, or like, you know, that they still, you know, yeah, it's gonna be hard sometimes with your parents because they're the last people that are going to look at you as an adult. My parents, my mom still likes when I call her when I'm flying because she still worries about me. And so as she says, I'm always going to be her little boy. And like, that's fine, you know. And sometimes as a 40-year-old man who is a priest and travels the world, you know, like sometimes I have to remind her, like, I am 40. I helped to run an international apostolate that is known all over the world. Like, it is okay. I know that I, you know, you don't have to remind me. I shouldn't be out in the streets in some foreign city. you know, or I know when to pull over when I'm tired. I don't need to. So, but it's just going to always be there. And I'm glad, you know, sometimes it might like be a little bit annoying. Like, yeah, I get it, but, you know, but unsolicited advice, whatever. But you know, as I've gotten older, I've appreciated it because I know exactly where it comes from. It is truly from a point of caring. And so take that for what it's worth, but also understand that those people who there, you know, with the, those of you who still live at home, those people have a lot to offer and for you to learn from. But what does it mean? It means actually paying attention. It means asking questions. It means volunteering. The best way to learn how to do stuff is to, when you see that something needs to be done, volunteer to either do it yourself so you can figure it out, or volunteer to assist in doing it so that you can learn from them as you cooperate with them. You can't learn as well just by watching from afar. You can't gain knowledge if you completely don't pay attention to it. But there's daily things that go around your house that you can really, really glean information and knowledge from that'll set you up for the future. And some of those things are really simple things. But I mean, it'd be terrible to waste the knowledge of good recipes for food that would fall by the wayside if you don't actually get your hands in there and start mixing up the ingredients yourself and start learning the you know, from that wisdom that's been gained over time, that there are things that in a recipe, like you might get something written on a sheet of paper that says, oh, you put this much of this in there and that thing in there. But if you're actually helping out and doing the work, then all of a sudden it's like, then that's an opportunity where your mom might be like, oh, and remember, like, I learned this the hard way. Like, if you do this, then, you know, it ruins everything. Or, you know, this is like, don't substitute this. Don't get the store brand of this thing. Get a good brand of that because it's going to make a difference in the taste. Or, you know, little things like that. It sounds trivial. It sounds small. In the grand scheme of things, it probably is. But it also, you know, when it comes to, you know, that is something that, you get older in life, you can now make for your own family, pass down to your own kids, enjoy for, you know, when that time's gone. There are things around the house that to learn about, that, you know, to see somebody, you know, fixing something that breaks. It doesn't, you know, again, it's something that happens all of the time, but it is a bit of information to be gained that you will continue to use in your future, all throughout your life, and money to be saved by doing so. If you can figure out how it is to fix things around the house or to, you know, be able to make something on your own without having to go and buy it, well, right now you sort of have, you know, carefree money in a sense because it's like, well, you know, not all of you, I don't know, but, you know, a lot of you have, like, live at home still. So whatever you make and, you know, working at the bakery or whatever it is, it's like, well, that's your money and you just, you know, get to go spend it on whatever you want to. But at a certain point, you're going to go out into that world, if you haven't already, and have your own rent, your own utilities, your own car, your own gas, your own insurance, your own, and everything starts mounting and multiplying. And all of a sudden, you start looking. That's when you start paying attention to the price of what the price of eggs are. And you start weighing out the whole, it, you know, yeah, I really like to eat like all organic, you know,
oh God,
free range, grass fed, you know, crackers. and like, that's the only way I do it. But when all of a sudden you realize like, I might not be able to get enough food to be able to sustain myself if I shop at that same store, all of a sudden you realize like sometimes you're not able to get what you really want in order to do those things. And when pennies matter, when little bits of money actually add up and matter, being able to fix something or being able to build something or put something together, and instead of having to go buy it or pay somebody to do it, that is a lifesaver on so many fronts. And so now's a time where you can gain that type of knowledge that sets you up for life. And in that, it's not just learning a recipe. It's not just learning how to do a task. It's not learning how to fix something or whatever. It is more than just saving money, just saving time, just being able to accomplish something. It is likewise an example for you to put forward to your future children that is invaluable. There are, you will not realize now, but you will when you get older, the lessons that you have learned without realizing it from your own families. I find myself more today than I ever have in my life thinking about good examples my father has given me in my life, from things that he didn't instruct me, but simply from things that I observed him doing, that those things now are deeply seated in my mind, things that I never thought of before. Things like how I would see my father go to work when he was sick and spend all day at work and come home feeling miserable and wake up early the next morning to do the same thing again. And I realized from that was something at the time I didn't appreciate. He didn't talk about it. He didn't brag about it or show it off or anything like that. No, he went to work because if he didn't work, he didn't get paid. If he didn't get paid, we didn't eat. And so now it's when I'm out in the middle of North Dakota and I'm sick as a dog, and it'd be the easiest thing in the world for me to just curl up and go back to bed because I just am sick. My mindset doesn't go to, I should just be sick and relax. My mindset goes to, if I don't say mass, nobody's coming to rescue me. If I don't go say mass and hear confessions, these people aren't going to have the sacraments for another month. And if I don't move on to the next city and do that all over again tomorrow and spend today traveling and tomorrow traveling and doing all of these things, each one of those places is going to be affected in that same way. So I drag myself out of bed and I move along and I go and do it because, not because it's something that I was taught, it's because something I saw in my father. And so when you find yourself all of a sudden like, oh, well, the sink's clogged, I know how to unclog a sink. And you're over there and you're working at it and you're bumping your head on the inside the cupboard and you're cutting yourself on the threads and you're just trying and you're doing this and you're troubleshooting and things that don't work. And that little boy is watching you do all of those things. He's not gonna realize it then, but when he's 35, he'll remember it. And it'll be a lesson for him. When he sees a mother completely devoted to taking care of the family despite their own difficulties, sickness, tiredness, putting the care in to do those little extra things, to put together those recipes that maybe you've learned, to have the attention to detail that you've taken from your own house to, again, fix things around the house. That example is something they're not going to think about now. It's not something that you're going to consciously give to them. But much later, they are going to recall back and realize, this is something I learned from my parents. And that is, when we talk about what is the primary duty of marriage life, well, it is the begetting and rearing of Catholic children. That is the rearing part of raising a family. It is teaching them the intangibles along with the instructions that you give to them. And so you can't think of one little thing as dispensable, but rather the entirety of it is so important to the entirety of your vocation in the future. Now, moving on from the practicalia of life, there is the practicalia of the spiritual life that you have to attend to now in your this young adulthood. Because again, just like in actual life, now you have entered into a time where nobody is going to actually hold your hand and help you along through the world in order to save your soul. Oh, I'm going to feed my addiction. And so, what do I mean by that? Well, again, up until recent times, you know, if you, now I understand some of you are like me. You didn't come from a traditional Catholic family, and so you might not have the background at all. So you've already started off on your own kind of journey of taking care of your spiritual life. Others of you have been born and raised traditional Catholic. So this short little bit of that, I talked to those people in particular that, you know, up until now, you may have been raised traditional Catholic. And so there was time for the family rosary. There's time for prayer, morning prayers, evening prayers. There was, you were told when we were going to church, and you hopped in the car because the family's going to church. And you learned how to serve because that's what you did as a boy when you received First Holy Communion. You learned to sing in the choir. You learned to do whatever because that was family life. That was just an integral part of it. And that's what you did. Now you're entering into a point where you have to be the one to discipline yourself to do those things, to continue on with those things. Those of you who didn't grow up traditional Catholic and have come to it on your own, you've already begun to realize that you have to rely on yourself to do that. But now even more so, because you now have to realize it's not just about, for those who have like sort of converted in, for those who were raised traditional Catholic, this might be a little bit of like a foreign concept to you. For those who have converted in, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. What oftentimes is the young adult conversion trapping? Well, it's what I like to refer to as like trad nerdydom, right? Which is to say that you get all focused on, you know, errors of like the modern church and focus on the heresies of the claimants there and, you know, whatever clown mask thing is going on and, you know, what is the new like controversy that's out there or things that like one group is saying versus another group or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It matters. I mean, it's important. Like, that's why you're here. Like, it's not that it doesn't matter. It matters a lot, but it doesn't matter in your day to day. That's what, like, I remember it was a dawning experience on me when I, like, because at first it was like, you know, when I first became a traditional Catholic, it's like, oh, like more information, I learned more stuff. And then at a certain point I stopped and I realized like, okay, I know that the modern church isn't the real church. I know that I need to go to Latin Mass. I know I need to go to a Latin Mass that doesn't include the name of an apostate you mentioned in the canon. I know that I need to, you know, like I know the answers to the questions of the controversy. So why am I paying attention to those things anymore? Because it doesn't, it merely serves my own morbid curiosity and sort of, you know, and inflames like those unjust passions of anger towards in indignation to things that I can't change. It's much like listening to talk radio about politics. You can do absolutely nothing, and it only serves to make you angry about the country and the world. Like, it is useless, and so is trad controversies. Those things, you've made it here. You're at the yak. You understand the question. So then the real question becomes, how do I save my soul? That's what matters moving forward. Not what Bob the Builder in Rome does. Or as I heard recently with Stephen Heiner interviewing Bishop Sanborn, he got referred to as Bob Golio, which I thought that was fantastic. So that was a creative one. It even made Bishop Sanborn laugh, which is always one of my great pleasures in life, is trying to make him laugh. Like, people ask me about that all the time. Like, do you see the latest? No, I didn't. No, I'm not going to go look it up. No, I'm not going to pay attention to it because I do not care. That's a, you know, when Bergoglio died and Bob was elected, like, people ask me, like, oh, like, what do you think about, like, the election that's going on and, like, all this stuff going on in Rome and the conclave? I'm like, I have as much interest in that as if the Archbishop of Canterbury died and they were replacing him. Like, it is a false religion is a different church, I have no interest in that whatsoever. It doesn't matter to me. I look on vaguely curious. That's it. And I think that's a good understanding and mindset to have. Yeah, we need to know so we can some things so we can explain them to people around us and so that we can gain more people to understand the problems in the church. I'm not saying completely dismiss it, but your primary focus when it comes to church matters needs to be on the sanctification and salvation of your soul. Because like I said, the thing that came to my head at a certain point when I was reading all this stuff, all of a sudden I realized like, oh yeah, I gotta get to heaven still. Like, how do I do that? Well, it's going back to this, to the basics. It's the unglamorous Catholic life. It is the Mass, the sacraments, the rosary, the daily prayers, the practicing virtues, the things that you read in the catechism that like didn't actually change when you were conservative Novus Ordo to becoming like actual traditional Catholic. Like those things still stayed the same. Oh, I still got to do those things. Oh yeah, oops. That's what you, your focus needs to be on, and that, you know, as your primary point to that. So now is the time when you look at your own life and realize, all right, until now, whether I was raised traditional Catholic or I've come into it and I've kind of had like this intellectual conversion more so than a true spiritual lifestyle conversion of things, now's the time I have to make that different, because guess what? In a short few years, you will not only have to establish it well for yourself, but you will have to impart that in other people and be the one to guide them. You cannot give what you do not have. You cannot instill sanctity if you don't actually have it yourself. You can't inspire people to bring themselves up in the spiritual life if you have zero spiritual life yourself. You can't demand your kids to do something that you do not practice on your own in private. It's hollow, it's empty, and they will see through it. And it, we will find yourself watching as they become young adults and fall away. You need to use the time now to truly establish a firm foundation for yourself, for your own personal sanctity. And so it starts with that. It has the positive side and the negative side to it. You have the purgation and you have the foundation that you have to have. You have to look at your life and realize that there are things in there that control and dictate the way you act that shouldn't have as much control over how you act. And those things need to be either greatly tempered or completely purged in order for you to continue on spiritual growth. Think about it in terms of some of the things can best be described as addiction. Coffee aside, let's not get carried away. But it's habits. It's bad habits. It's you look at the things like, look at your day-to-day life. And if you look at it honestly, you can find the things that actually control what you do in a day. When you rise up, what is the first thing that you look at? If the answer is your phone, you're starting to see the picture. If that is the greatest source of your distractions, if that is the greatest source of taking you away from spiritual thought, if that is the greatest source of interruptions, if that is the first thing you look at and the last thing that you gaze upon, that controls your life, whether you like to admit it or not. It is something that dictates what you do. It takes away the free will that God has given you to be able to choose what is virtuous. And you have to think to yourself, I either have to temper this or somehow eliminate it depending upon what my life is. You know, some of us, like I've always said, if I didn't have to travel, I would have a flip phone today. 100%. I mean, I grew up before cell phones, so I'm not like necessarily attached to cell phones. But if I could throw away my smartphone today, I would 100% do so. But it is really great for work when I'm on the road. And so it's the necessary evil. But even me as a priest, I realize that it takes up entirely too much of my time. So what do? I start leaving it in the other room and go pray in the church. I make sure to like plug it in and put it behind me at my desk, or you know, put it on silent so I don't hear every ding and update that comes along. That way, to learn to walk away from it. It's hard to do, but it's like you gotta actually force yourself to do it. It's the, you know, other types of things. Maybe it is, you know, video games. Maybe it's movies. Maybe it's television. Maybe it's whatever. I mean, I know all of those things are sort of like attached because we're talking about screens, but, you know, if you ever wanted to like really dive into the most addictive thing in this life, it is the dopamine effect that comes from access to screens, because they are specifically designed to affect your behavior and to cause you to be addicted to it. So the only way to deal with it is to treat it like an addiction, where you say, I need to actually purge this, cut it off, and throw it over here. Like, I don't use it when I have to, not when I want to, or not when it beckons me. But there are other things too. You know, it is, we all have our vices. Maybe it is a laziness that we've allowed to be instilled in ourselves. Maybe it's an anger that can boil itself up very easily. Maybe it's, you know, that we are too given over to the niceties of the world, like a gluttony for like certain pleasures of taste and whatever. The various aspects where we realize that, okay, if I take a little step back and look at what is my predominant fault, understanding what that is, and to realize that there are contrary virtues to be practiced that are connected to that, then I can start focusing on actually practicing those virtues as a particular focus in my life. Again, it's not just like my predominant faults are always going to be my predominant fault, because that's the sort of just the initial tendency towards sin. It's not a sin in itself, but it's to look at and say, I'm inclined towards these things by nature. And it doesn't mean that I can't succeed in overcoming it. In fact, it means the opposite. If you look at the saints, so many of them, they became known for the things that were contrary to their primary faults. The Curia of Ars, he was always said to have, like, anger was his predominant fault, that he was very, very prone to having a short temper. But he became known worldwide for being extraordinarily meek, not because it came natural to him, but because he disciplined himself so much and he strove after practicing that virtue to such a great level of perfection that was what was always hard until the day he breathed his last breath seemed to come off naturally to him, to those who observe from the outside. But it was gained virtue and practice that got him there. And it might just be, and then there's also just the mundane things that, again, that control our lives. You know, it could be whatever. It could be that, you know, we smoke, and so not a great habit to have. I should probably work on breaking that now, because it's something, again, that controls my, that dictates my actions. I realize I have a drink before I go to bed every night. Something that controls our actions, you know, something that we should get a better handle upon in those things. And it comes from actually willing to make legitimate, real sacrifices where we go without, so that we can put, at least bring it back into the realm of under our own, it falls under what I choose to do rather than what I do without thinking about it. Now, in addition to that, now we have the contrary to the purging, we have the founding, the foundation aspect of it. This is the time where you have to look at and say, I need a really solid spiritual life for myself. I need to take and make sure that I have a core daily prayer schedule that is unshakable no matter how busy the day gets. And that thing needs to be something that I need to set as a foundation that can be built upon as I grow in the spiritual life. I need to now, you know, as I need to learn in the world, I need to learn about things of the faith too. I need to learn about those saints. I need to learn about my catechism more perfectly. I need to learn aspects of apologetics. I need to apply myself in the same way I should apply myself to industry in the world, I need to apply myself to the industry in the spiritual life so that I can, again, build a good foundation for myself and have a working knowledge of things to share with others, others that I interact with in the world that makes them attract them to the faith, and others who I might be in charge of as a parent of children and a spouse to a spouse. that is something that if I don't start establishing those things now, then I am at best going to be playing catch up when it matters, and at worst not be able to instill what and ensure what I need to do. I also need to realize that where I am now, whether I'm here or here or here in the spiritual life, doesn't matter. Again, I have the entire life ahead of me that I'm supposed to build upon that. I will say that right now, I think one of the most toxic ideas that is out there that I hear from lay people and clergy, good clergy alike, is this sort of reliance on back on like, well, it's not a mortal sin if you this or that or whatever it is. If our standard is going to be not committing mortal sin, then we will not progress in spiritual life. So if you look at your life and you think about whether it's modesty or if it's about, you know, mass or an attendance of mass, or if it's about, you know, giving to the church, you know, of your own substance, whatever it is. If you think of, well, what do I got to do to not commit a sin? And then you'll never progress. We're not called to not fall into middle mortal sin. We are called, each and every one of us, to be perfect. And so in order to gain imperfection, I have to grow till I die. And so purge that idea out of your mind. Yes, it's important to know what a mortal sin is so you can really avoid that. But if that is your baseline, that's like when I talk to, like, you know, like worldlings, they're like, well, you know, I'm a good person, you know, I've never murdered anybody or raped people. And it's like, if the measure of a good person is not murdering and raping people, like, we are in a lot of trouble. But this so often that I hear that, like, that's not a good person. That's somebody who's not a absolute felon who deserves to be executed. Like, that's not good. That's just not the worst. You know, it's like, well, you know, like, at least I'm not a terrorist, you know. Okay, cool. Fantastic, you know. I guess I'll trust you with all my money and children. So no, it's like that is what it's akin to. So to purge that from your mind, that's not what we want. We want to grow in the way of perfection. And so it also comes with that, not only the foundation of your spiritual life so that you can build upon it, learn things, and all of that, but it comes from seizing the opportunities that you have now presented in front of you. You have the extra time. You don't have kids, you don't have spouses, you just have jobs. So, like, you should be looking at how many masses can I get to in a week? How many opportunities can I have to receive the sacraments? What can I do to be able to practice virtue more frequently? Whether it's in volunteering my time towards something, volunteering resources or talents that I have, whatever it may be. Or just looking at your own church and realizing, like, oh, Father's going to make a mission run. Somebody's going to have to pick him up from the airport. Well, I can either just do nothing and wait for people who are married and have children to, like, skip out of supper with their kids and go pick up the priest from the airport. Or I can go myself and do it and take the responsibility on myself in that way. I mean, granted, that one's sort of like a, you know, mission priest specific, which sort of connected to, I guess. But, you know, I mean, but it's a real thing. It's like so often, and I don't begrudge it. I don't, like, I think it's valuable in itself. It's not something you should stop once you have kids, because, again, there it is. Again, it's good in and of itself, and it's also really important to instilling that Catholic life in your children. But it's so many things that I see go on that it's like, oh, it's the families that are doing these things, but where are the single people? They're nowhere to be found so often. And it's something that again, not that it should be taken away from those families, but it's something that should be added to by you all, the people in your station of life, because it has to start with that outward looking, that selflessness, because starting the selflessness now bodes well for the selflessness in the future. And then lastly is, for the last part of this talk, is the idea of looking at my spiritual life. Okay, the foundation I have to lay for myself. The next part of that is also, where do I see myself for a spiritual life for my family? What do I mean by that? When you, following your vocation, which, you know, being here at the YAG, we're going to work on the assumption that that is marriage, as most people are called to the married state, and especially most people at YAGs. And so let's, you know, assume marriage state. Your duty when you get married, your primary duty is to create, like, that institution is made to give the best chance of success of you, your spouse, and your future children saving their souls. And so you have to think to yourself now, while you're young adults, where do I go or stay to give myself that best chance towards that? Because a lot of you are coming in from all sorts of different aspects. Some of you are coming from proper churches, some of you are coming from missions, some of you are coming from places that have very infrequent mass altogether. And the honest question you have to say is not, where do I have sentimentality, connections of, like, where I want to be? Oh, my family's here and I like being around my family. Oh, my friends are here. Oh, I grew up with this priest or this group and that they just really like them, and et cetera. Like, those things are good. And, you know, like, I'm not discounting the importance of those in life. But the honest assessment has to be, as an adult who is going to be responsible for spouse and children, where do I give them the greatest chances of succeeding and saving their souls? Because, and balancing that out with what I can do with my life. I, my entire priesthood, the entire work that I've done, you know, obviously not every aspect of it, but the what I would call, like, my own, if you will, like the stuff that I have done as my main body of work as a priest, has been missions. Mm-hmm. Has been traveling far and wide. Has been setting up from scratch, building up organically from that, establishing, building up, making successful missions. I have loved the work of the missions, but I'm here to tell you that mission, raising a family in a mission situation, is so much harder for that those children to be sanctified than it is in a church. And just because you've been there, and just because you have attachments to it, doesn't mean you have to be there. Because now is a time when you can look at it and say, do I have the opportunity to maybe relocate myself? Yeah, I understand my family might not come with me. My friends, I might miss them. But I have to look to what my responsibility is. There's a, I'll use an example of how serious I am about that. There was a family down in Texas. This is my Dallas mission that now has grown, but this is before. It was still a very small mission, and we were barely making ends meet for things, and we had mass like once or twice a month there. And we got a new family in. They were really great, young children, energetic, wanting to be pious family. They came over from the adult, wanting to really give their kids a Catholic life. And, you know, benefit, they also, like, the man was successful at work, so he happened to have a little bit of money, so he could help fund to make sure that we got there and everything too, which was, you know, also very nice. And one day he came up to me, he said, Father, like, I really want my kids to, like, I really want my kids to have a Catholic life growing up. like, what do we need to do? What can I do to help? And so that we can have Mass more frequently here on Sundays, and that, you know, we can maybe have every weekend, and that we can maybe even eventually get a, like a permanent priest, so we can have weekday Masses and things like that. And I looked at him and I said, if that's what you want for your kids, and I knew what he did for work too, that he wasn't necessarily tied down to a place. I said, if that's what you want to do for your kids, you need to move to Cincinnati. And his mouth dropped in absolute shock. It was the last thing he thought he would ever hear. Because, and eventually he went, okay, well, that's interesting. I said, yeah, this is a mission. I have no idea if it's going to grow. I have no idea if this, you know, this heart of this, there's 30 people here. I have no idea what the future is, but it's not going to be this in any given time in the immediate future. Your kids are here now. And so, you know, he went, talked to his wife, everything like that, and they came up to visit, and eventually they moved here. And they've set up their Catholic life here in doing so. And I talked to him after he moved here, and he said, Father, I don't know if you understood how much you shocked me when you told me that. And I said, told you what? And he's like, he's like, well, you remember you told me, you know, this about, you know, like, and you told, then you said move to Cincinnati. And I said, yeah, I'm like, well, what of it? And he says, well, I know what, like, what we gave for donations. I know how little that, you know, like, I know there was shoestring to begin with. I know we didn't, we were a chunk of the population coming out of your Mass. Like, and we were really like one of the only like younger families. Like, why would you sabotage your own mission to be able to tell us to come to a place that has plenty of people? I was surprised by that. I looked at him, I said, I would close every single mission I had if people moved to proper parishes. I don't think you understand why we do missions. We do missions because people are in places that they can't get to the to a church and to have Mass. So we go to take care of them because we have a need to do so. But I don't have a want to have to bring, I don't tell people, yeah, hey, you know what? You should move to North Dakota. Like, it's really great in the winter there. You'll love it. Like, I'll be there, one of us will be there once a month. Like, don't you worry about it. Like, I don't tell people to do that. That's insanity. So why would I not tell those same people, if they have the opportunity, move out of there? And I love North Dakota. I love the, that's, Grand Forks is our longest standing mission, and those people are most faithful. They are so devoted to everything that we do. But they all understand it as well. That's why they have begun to, some of them, some of those families, like, travel and visit churches, you know, just so that their kids can have good Catholic people that they meet and have as friends, rather than being stuck with worldlings and satisfying themselves with like conservative Novus Ordo or Protestants or something like that. Mm-hmm. Those, that's going to corrupt your kids' faith. Mm-hmm. That's going to not make them better. It's going to drag them down. And yes, maybe they might be able to, in some way, shape, or form, like, maintain their faith through it all, but it's not making it easier. Whereas being in a Catholic church is. And, you know, it's like, so you can look at yourself and say, like, where am I now? And where is the best chance for me to succeed in raising a family in doing so? I mean, I know I'm biased, but I like St. Gertrude's pretty good, you know? In fact, I will say this. This is unbiased. It is not, do not take this as a knock against any other church out there, any other clergy. It is not meant to do that. It is, I'm in no way being critical whatsoever. Do not go back to your priest and be like, Father McKenna, you guys stink, you know? That is not the case. I just have been all over the world and all over this country. I have been to trad churches everywhere. There are churches and priests who are better at me than one thing or another. There are priests, there are churches that do certain things better than other things. There is no church that I've ever seen that does parish life better than St. Gertrude's. That is our bread and butter. If you want to, case in point, for you who are not from here, you might come in for this weekend and say, we had this beautiful mass on Friday night. There was a sermon given. There was benediction afterwards with all these prayers. Then Saturday morning, there was a high mass and another sermon and these devotions. And Sunday came and there was a high mass with incense and, you know, beautiful sermon and confessions heard all the day long. And then afterwards, there was the vespers and benediction in the evening. And then we had rosary procession where we did 15 decades of the rosary down at at the center of town and everything. Oh, it was a really nice thing. Like they really rolled out the red carpet for us coming in here to St. Gertrude's to do that. No, this is all the time. This is life at St. Gertrude's. That is a normal Friday, what you witnessed yesterday. That is every Friday here at St. Gertrude's. This is, I mean, the oblation part with the sister, that's extra. I mean, but it would have happened regardless if you guys were here or not. We didn't schedule it because the YAG was happening. We realized after we scheduled it, oh no, the YAG is that weekend. Well, I guess we still do it. That wasn't extra. That was happening anyways. Saturday morning high mass is normal. In fact, you came during low season.
Yeah.
Because you will see on Sunday, mass will be beautiful, but it's congregationally sung. Because the choir is on vacation right now, so people can go away and take vacations throughout the summer and not have to come for choir practice. It'll still be really nice, but it's not as nice as it is throughout the rest of the year. You'll also realize that in this time, like if you stayed on for a number of days afterwards, well, you know, like you come Tuesday, you're not gonna have a high mass on that day. But if you're here during when school's in session, you'll have a high mass just about every single day here. You'll have a sermon every single day here. You will have events going on. Come on a Wednesday. There'll be more people in the parking lot than there are at choir practice. Rollerblading around, kids playing in the mud, parents tailgating out by the cars. Like, that is life here. We have worked long and hard. Some of it is just, a lot of it is really just continuing on the hard, lifelong labor of Bishop Dolan in setting it up. But also it has been us continuing on and building upon it after they've died to realize that our goal here is to have a place where you could come at any time and you find your friends here who are Catholic friends and that you can have as a little oasis from the rest of the world, which is trying to not bring you up, but rather to steal you away. And so I say that parish life here is second to none because I know it to be true only because of how hard we work at it, and that is our focus. Our focus is going to be parish life, the liturgy in absolute perfection, and, you know, giving, you know, food for souls via sermons and devotions and, you know, all of those things. Other places do things, other certain things better than we do. There are, you know, there are better theologians out there that have a higher understanding of like deep theological matters and things like that. But when it comes to the bread and butter of like parish life, family life, those things, I think we do a pretty good job. But it's, again, not a detriment to other places. There are a lot of really good traditional Catholic churches out there. And maybe one of them is like a really good option for you to build your family around based upon that. But I'd much rather see you move to a really proper church than to stay in a mission. I'd much rather you think to yourself, where can I go that has all that I need to put my family in it so that that family can have all the tools as much as possible to succeed and sanctify themselves rather than what can I do to try to get those things to come into where I am so I have more to give to my family in the future. That's a much harder road to hoe. It's much harder to get kids to understand the value of the Mass and the truth of the true presence of the Blessed Sacrament and how much, what it means to be devoted and what it means to have a regular sacramental life. When you don't have the regular sacraments, when you're attending Mass in a house or in a rented space and like, okay, well, yes, during Mass, Jesus is here, but then he's gone and like, you don't see him again. And like, so like, if you leave after the consecration, yeah, you genuflect, but otherwise you just come in and treat it like a room because that's all it is. And it's confusing for children, and it's hard for children. It's hard for you as adults. So I say that now because when you get married and you have kids, and then you start to think, maybe now that I have this family that I'm responsible for, maybe now I should think about moving someplace like a St. Gertrude's where, you know, like I can set up a good family life. It is so much harder. You actually have a big boy job then. You actually have stability that you don't want to disrupt in your life. You actually have a much greater risk that you now take upon yourself to attempt to move. You move at 22. Like, what's the worst thing that happens? Like, oh, like, well, that didn't work out. I didn't find a job. I guess I just moved back to where I came from. You know, like, the risk is, it's not zero, but it's a lot less, you know?
Yeah.
You default on a lease at 22 years old. Like, they can't get blood from a stone. So what are they going to come after you for? You know, like, so it's, you know, you default on a lease on an apartment when you're 35 and you have like a wife and kids. Like, that's a lot more to worry about. And so now is the time to actually think about those things before you have those dependents. Like, do I, you know, I should be thinking about moving out and being independent anyways. Where does that have me go? It could be somewhere that you aren't necessarily weren't thinking about before, because it's not where you grew up and it's not where you're comfortable. But you understand for yourself that this is the opportunity that I have to really sanctify myself and sanctify others. And again, it's not to say people in a mission are bad. It's not to say that people, you might still end up finding that you have to stay in a mission when you leave and go back and say, I can't do that now, but you know, I will look for an opportunity maybe in the future where I can move to a proper parish or whatever it is. But that should be the mindset. That is how you set yourself up for success, to make the things that it's hard, you know, the world is against you enough in all the other ways. What can you do to give yourself the greatest chance of success in actually really truly living and perfecting the vocation that God calls you to? So that's what you're in your state of life now. So it's the time of preparation, it's the time of looking forward, it's the time of laying that good foundation down for yourselves. I guess that's it.
Excellent.
I just said this, but thank you so much, Father. I'll say it on the microphone too. Take like 3 minutes.